How did the pro-life movement do in the recent elections, and what's going on with the pro-life movement in general? Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Eric Scheidler, Executive Director of the Pro-Life Action League. He's a returning guest. His website is prolifeaction.org. Eric, thanks so much for joining us again.
I'm so glad to be with you again.
All right, so recently we had the midterm elections. What are your thoughts about that, especially in light of the pro-life movement?
Well, I think there are three main takeaways for us in the pro-life movement from this most recent election. And the first is that the increase of Republican control of the Senate, maybe as many as four seats, we've got a couple elections where there's some recounts going on, but this is going to help President Trump appoint those good federal judges that we need, not just justices to the Supreme Court, should there be another vacancy, but also the district and appellate judges that have such a big impact, not only on abortion laws like restrictions and regulations and other ways that we can curtail the harm of abortion, but also on the civil rights of pro-life activists that are being threatened by states and municipalities around the country with various restrictive bubble zones and buffer zones and the like, as well as the issue of religious freedom for pro-life and religious employers and for others. So that's very encouraging, especially in light of the recent fall that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg suffered, which again makes us start to think about where there might be another vacancy on the Supreme Court. So not having to worry as much about a very, very tight margin there, not having to try to appease a pro-choice senator like a Susan Collins of Maine should make that whole process quite a bit smoother and easier for us. We might even be so fortunate as to get a judge like Amy Coney Barrett onto the Supreme Court, which would be absolutely amazing. She would be a fantastic justice for us. So that's the first thing. Greater Senate majority means a greater likelihood of really great judges and even justices to the Supreme Court. Number two, on the kind of darker side, the fact that the House of Representatives next year is going to be controlled by a increasingly radically pro-abortion Democratic leadership means that our opportunity to get measures like defunding Planned Parenthood through is pretty much dead for now. We're not going to be able to defund Planned Parenthood. That's extremely disappointing. We came so close, one vote away in the Senate. John McCain decided not to support the Obamacare repeal that would have defunded Planned Parenthood. So that's discouraging, but it also is a wake-up call for us that we have to take action locally. We can't rely on the legislatures. We can't rely on Washington, D.C. to solve this problem of abortion for us. We've got to take part in this locally and in our own states. And indeed, very much of the movement on the pro-life issue in recent years has been at the state level. And so we turn our efforts there knowing that that's where we have to work now. And then number three would be the fact that, we've got some governors out there who might be willing to send some cases to the Supreme Court. Mike DeWin was elected in the state of Ohio. He has said he will sign a heartbeat bill that would ban abortion after a heartbeat can be detected, which is within just a few weeks of pregnancy beginning. And so these test cases against Roe versus Wade might start to work their way through the courts, in an even more aggressive way than we've seen so far. So those are the things that stand out to me. Oh, I think we also have to mention those state-level measures that similarly may result in a court having to decide on the Roe versus Wade question. Specifically, West Virginia and Alabama both passed ballot initiatives that do two things. First, they claim that there is no constitutional right to abortion in their state constitutions, because this has to be made clear to judges, or they'll sort of insert it there. And secondly, that there's no constitutional right to have abortion funded. And it's that second piece that's particularly significant, because we've seen federal judges try to force states to pay for abortions because of some notion that some sort of twisted reading of the state constitution that requires this. But when you've got the constitution itself saying there is no such right, well, the judges can't make that right up anymore. So those were all those two things in particular, the governors who are going to sign this legislation and those initiatives are particularly encouraging to see.
All right, since we're still talking about the midterms, just one last question along this line, and that is, what was the Kavanaugh effect, since much of the Kavanaugh debate. In other words, trying to approve or disapprove, Judge Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court. Honestly, the overall issue that drove so much of the animus one way or the other was abortion. And so comment on the effect of that in terms of some of the senators that were up for re-election.
Well, I think that the Kavanaugh effect probably helped the pro-life cause in the Republican Party way more than the Democratic side.
Absolutely.
And a big part of the reason for that is that the Democrats were already extremely fired up and mobilized even before that whole controversy appeared. Anybody who was angry about the way the Kavanaugh thing went down on the Democrat side was probably already in a state of real excitement about the election. Republicans, though, when they saw what happened to Brett Kavanaugh, when they saw all these unfounded accusations being leveled at this man, the whole idea of due process being thrown out the window and any kind of accusation being taken at face value, even without any corroborating evidence, that really fired people up to get involved. And I think it had a big impact in states like Indiana and North Dakota and other states around the country.
Sure.
We'll see what happens in Florida and Arizona. As we're recording this, we still don't know how those elections are going to go. But I do think that overall the effect was very beneficial. In fact, some commentators have said that if the election had been held immediately after that whole imbroglio, it would have been even more of a victory for the conservative or pro-life side. I think going forward, voters are going to continue to remember that story because it really was a historic battle that I don't think we're soon going to forget.
They are claiming, by the way, that the Arizona side, that the Democrat beat the Republican as of this recording. Alas and alack. But tell us about some recent protests you were involved in related to the pro-life issue.
Yes, and this is also related to the election. We held a protest here in Illinois, in the Chicago suburb of Skokie, which is quite an affluent suburb, at a location called CareFem. This is a national abortion chain with several different locations around the country. It started in Atlanta. And their goal is to present a kind of an upscale image, and they really go after abortion stigma, as they call it. They kind of have a flippant attitude. They have posters up on subways and stuff in Washington, D.C. and Atlanta that say, abortion, yeah, we do that. Kind of a sort of flippant attitude towards abortion. They've opened up a new location in Illinois trying to cash in on taxpayer funding of abortion, which we now have in Illinois, thanks to the signature of our Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, who was actually just voted out of office last week. Deservedly so. But we're going to have an even worse guy in his place. But many people who came out to this protest, about 100 folks came out to protest on a chilly but very sunny morning in Skokie, Illinois, against this new abortion facility. Many of those who came out did so as a sort of response to the election, which was very difficult for us in Illinois. We lost two wonderful congressmen, Randy Haltgren and Peter Roskam, very pro-life guys who were unseated in their elections. Mm. We also lost one of our best state representatives, a fellow named Peter Breen, who actually is an attorney for a pro-life public interest law firm as well.
Yeah, we've interviewed him. We've interviewed him on this radio program. Yeah, Peter Breen.
Well, listeners know that he is one of the great politicians. When people talk cynically about politics, I think of guys like Peter Breen. They are the real thing. Christian men who are out there doing the right thing. Well, he lost his seat. It's a heartbreaker. And the response to that from the pro-life community was to go and protest an abortion clinic. And I'm so proud of the people who did that, who took their disappointment, took their dismay, and said, God, what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to get active. I'm supposed to get out on the front lines. So we held this protest. It looks like they may have even canceled abortion appointments that morning while we were there, which is also very encouraging because we know that any little thing will tip the scales about that decision. Simply having a protest taking place outside of an abortion facility or having your abortion appointment canceled will sometimes cause a woman to reconsider her decision and not go through with the abortion. So that was a very encouraging thing to see as well.
And I understand you had some posters or whatever of unborn children aborted at 15, 11, and 8 weeks. And by the way, some people might say, oh, that's counterproductive. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've been doing this ever since I was a little kid, and it's been my job to work for the Pro-Life Action League and being out there in the public square for about 15 years now. And I can tell you that there's always going to be controversy surrounding the presentation of abortion victim photos, but there's also always going to be an impact. When you've got an abortion facility opening up in a community, nothing drives home that reality like seeing those pictures. People don't like to see the pictures, but the reason they don't like to see them is because abortion is ugly, and they don't want to be reminded of the controversy. We have to be judicious when we decide to use these pictures. We don't take them out in front of daycare centers or that kind of thing. We often use warning signs so drivers can avoid the display if they want to. But in a case like this, when you're out in front of an abortion clinic, you have to show the victims. You know, our Savior Jesus Christ was publicly and very horrifically executed, and kids saw it, and adults saw it, and elderly people saw it. The entire community of Jerusalem saw this man beaten and dragged through the streets with his, you know, dragging his cross behind him, and being crucified out in public. So I think that's a sign to us. Our Lord did not hide from the community the ugliness of his own victimization, and neither should we hide away forever the victimization of these poor little children. Now, that said, the signs that we use are very evocative of a relationship with these children. There's a picture of a beautiful face, a little baby boy aborted at 15 weeks. It's not even a very gory picture. And I think, you know, really only adults would kind of get what the picture is of. But the caption says, this is his only baby picture. Mm. This is his only baby picture. Think about that. The only picture a person has in their whole life is of them being aborted. There's another picture of a little foot that says, she'll never learn to walk. So we're trying to prompt people to think about these landmarks of childhood development, baby pictures and walking and, you know, the little perfect fingers that we always count as parents when our babies are born, and to try to connect that to our unborn brothers and sisters so that we will remember the victims of abortion and recognize that they were our brothers and sisters too. So we had these very powerful signs out there showing the reality of what was happening inside that building. And we also had signs that instead of a stop abortion now, we had pictures of a kind of a big yellow arrow that says abortionists pointing at that building so that we can educate the community that that's what is now happening in your midst and raise some of that public opposition to abortion and to this particular abortion facility.
This abortion facility that just opened up, did they tout themselves as an abortion clinic as they tried to move into the community?
No, as a matter of fact, they tried to hide the reality that they were an abortion facility. In none of their filings with the village of Skokie, Illinois, did they disclose that they would be doing abortions.
What?
They were very vague.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's like Planned Parenthood in Aurora. That's how you and I first met about 10 years ago, talking about that story. But go on about
this
one in Skokie.
Or Planned Parenthood in Flossmoor, Illinois, that just opened up back in January. The abortion industry knows they're not really welcome in communities. Even pro-choice people don't want to live next door or work next door to an abortion clinic. And so they hide their identity. They hide who they are. And they do it very cleverly. They have teams of lawyers that create front companies. I could give you a whole list. Fuller 88, Gemini Office Development, Healthcare Partners Group, all these different LLCs and other type of entities that they create in one inside of another in order to sneak into communities around the country. It's really despicable, but it goes to show that all these years later, America has not accepted abortion. We're still deeply divided, and even people who say they're, you know, quote-unquote pro-choice don't want to be near abortion.
Mm. Isn't that interesting? It reminds me of the Dean Cain character in Gosnell, where he kept saying, what's that smell? What's that smell? We have about half a minute left. Any comments about being a one-issue voter when it comes to the issue of abortion?
You know, I'm a one-issue voter, and I would love the luxury to consider all these other issues, many of which I'm very interested in. But when you've got 2,500 unborn children being killed every day and not having the opportunity to be an immigrant or to have health care or to get Social Security benefits or any of these other things that we debate about on the other issues, you know, I think you really have to make that your priority. You know, these children's lives matter, and if we won't value the most vulnerable and tiniest members of the human family, how can we really say that we care about any of us?
Wow. Eric Scheidler, ProLifeAction.org. Thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
My honor.